This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
And thank you, Scott Slade. Energy does matter whether you're in Atlanta, whether you're in San Francisco, or Fort Lauderdale.
Everybody uses electrons.
We're talking about energy and telling you why it matters today. In the studio with me, I've got some very smart people. And as we said in our last episode, you definitely can get some continuing education credits by listening to Energy Matters this week. Dr. Tidwell from UGA, Dr. Jackie Tidwell, is back with us. She went to Grand Valley State initially before she got her PhD at the University of Georgia. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me here.
Andrew Saunders, you're a double dog with wildlife biology as an undergrad. How fun was that?
It was a blast.
Yeah.
They let us play with dynamite at times.
Seriously?
Yeah. Wow. Beaver dams.
Yeah. So let me tell you a story about a beaver dam, because my dad lives on my granddad's original property that he bought in 1942.
And stand by to edit.
My dad is 80. And
wow.
He has been in this battle with these beavers. And you can't shoot them as a citizen, and so he hasn't shot them, but he has tried to destroy their dam and the things that they're building, because they dam up the bottom land and make it unusable. So have you ever done battle with a beaver?
I have battled beavers. What I would suggest is you're not going to win, but there are tools to mitigate. So what he really wants is a Clemson leveler. We'll give them a little bit of credit. It's a way to keep water flowing despite their efforts to dam. Or the cheaper offer setup is what's called a three-log set. Basically, any way to move water through a dam that they can't stop.
Wow. So, and you did your undergrad at UGA as well as your master's degree in forestry.
Yes, sir.
Right. So, a lot of forestry majors, a lot of forest in Georgia, 26 million acres. Did you have a master's thesis that you did?
No, program? I did a non-thesis master's, and I really kind of bridged the gap between forestry, urban environments, and GIS.
Yeah, and John, you were up in Chicago, Lake Forest College, and spent time in Tennessee before making your way
correct.
Down to
I'm Georgia. A history major, so that would make me the least educated person, apparently, at this table.
Well, I'm an English major, so I'm with you. I've read a lot about energy and a lot about trees and a lot about the other things we talk about, but I do have two masters from the University of Georgia as well, one in public relations and one
I'm in the junior position.
Nonprofit organizations, but we'll talk slow, John.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Energy Matters, and we've got some questions today because we've got a linguist in the house,
oof.
Dr. Tidwell, and words matter.
In context, yes.
Yeah, in
tell
context.
The president that, would you please?
And so when we talk energy lingo and we try to define these things here, oftentimes people are scratching their head. And this show is an early morning show, so folks are waking up. Maybe they haven't had their second or third or fourth cup of coffee yet. So we want to unpack this for folks today. So I want to start off by just asking, John, what is the difference between solar thermal and photovoltaic, a PV that we hear about? Can you explain the difference?
It's a great question. When we think of solar, when you talk about solar, everybody instantly thinks of solar electric panels. These are the panels we see 99% of the time around. It's a panel, it creates electricity, and there you go. But when you have solar thermal, you have a panel that has zero electricity coming into it and zero electricity coming out of it. It is essentially, and it happens to be a mix of glycol and water often, but it is a solution, a water-based solution that goes in. The sun or the infrared heats it, and then the water, the solution comes out and is then essentially put in your hot water tank or goes through a heat exchanger and heats water. So there are two different ways of creating energy, and people forget that hot water is energy.
Andrew, let me ask you, one of the things we do at the PSC is set rates. We create different tariffs that people can choose from. The average person just pays their energy bill. They call the power company, they get their energy going at their house, either natural gas or electricity or both, then they pay their bill. But there's something called real-time pricing or time of use. And why should a person care about that? What is it? Why should they care about it? And is that something that residential folks who listen to our show should consider?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea behind either is that energy is more expensive at certain times when there's more demand, and it's cheaper at night when there's less demand. And so if you can have your uses be at night, say to run a dishwasher, heat and cool your home, charge a car, that you can pay less for it. But what you have to be really careful about is that you're not using energy during the day in the summer between 2 and 7. So absolutely, you should check it out. And in fact, I've had utility companies run analyses on my behalf where they'll look at the data from my meter and say, you know, Mr. Saunders, if you were to switch to this tariff, you could save a few hundred dollars or whatever.
Tariff is the rate.
That's
okay.
Right. Sorry.
All right.
So definitely worth checking it out, especially if you're one of those people that kind of thinks about when you use energy.
Give some names. What are some of those programs called?
Nights and weekends is what Georgia Power calls it. So if you go to georgiapower.com/nights and weekends, with the EMCs, you can go to their website, jacksonemc.com, mm-hmm. waltonemc.com, and you can see their programs. Not every EMC offers it, but most of them do. And I've been on it both with Jackson and Walton. And in order to make it work, though, and save money, I find that you definitely have to turn your ACs off from 2 to 7 during the summer.
Or you could be like me and have a solar energy system, and then I'm kicking that energy use in the face in the summer,
I
don't have to pay as much on my bill.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Dr. Tidwell about wave and tidal energy. We've got 100 miles of coast in Georgia, and I know down at Sapelo Island, where we're doing a charity solar project for the Gullah Geechee community, as I was going around the island, I noticed there was an old tidal mill there that they used to turn a millstone using the tide. Is that something you think is going to come in coastal areas?
I don't know if it will or not, but for a lot of folks, they don't actually even understand what it is. I'll tell you, we've had a lot of discussions even with future engineers,
come
right?
On.
So wave and tidal energy is basically where you use the power of wind waves, right? Whether it's on the ocean or even big rivers, right? So you don't actually have to have the ocean to generate wave energy. And what those waves are then used for are to turn turbines and thus produce electricity, but also on the ocean for water desalination efforts. And so there's actually a lot of research that happens in this part of the country on that up at Oak Ridge National Lab in Tennessee. And they work with the folks at Pacific Northwest National Lab out in Seattle, as well as Sandia in the middle of New Mexico, right, in Albuquerque. They all work together to see how this energy can be used well without affecting estuaries and other, you know.
So they have this in London. They have a huge bank. It's called almost like a dam. Obviously, boats can go over the top of it and stuff. But then under the water, they have these turbines. And when the tide flows in, then they capture that. And when the tide flows out, they capture that. So they get it both ways, and they get it at all times of the day.
You're thinking about water turning a turbine. If you go to our lakes, let's just take Lake Oconee and Lake Sinclair. So during the afternoon, we let and release water from the dam from Lake Oconee down into Lake Sinclair. But at night, we reverse those same turbines and pump the water back up while the electricity's cheap. Pump it back up out of Lake Sinclair into Lake Oconee so we can do the same thing all over again the next day.
That's cool.
And the cool thing is you get a tide in those lakes. So usually you wouldn't think about having a tide. Of course, it's not caused by the moon. It's artificially caused. But that's called pump storage. And you see this a lot in Northern Europe where they have mountains. And you pump the water back up and then release it the next day over and over again. And what you're doing is you're taking advantage of the fact that at night, electricity is cheap. And at night in Europe, especially, the wind is blowing.
Why is electricity cheap at night, Tim?
Well, because there's not a lot of demand for that electricity. So demand impacts the cost of the power, because the more plants you turn on, you wind up having to turn on your most inefficient plant in order to meet the demand of a busy, hot summer afternoon, plants that cost more to operate. And so the really cheap, efficient plants are the ones that are the most economical to run. For us in Georgia, it's the nuclear energy that we have. It is the existing nuclear power is the cheapest, but solar is really making great headway in Georgia. As the solar that we're putting online now is actually cheaper than coal.
And so, Tim, is it correct, looking at that demand, having to turn on those inefficient plants, that at certain times the utility company actually loses money on the extra energy they have to supply?
Well, there are places where, not Georgia, where we're paying people to take our power, but if you look at Germany, for example, they will pay Poland to take their power. California pays surrounding states to take their power if the wind is really blowing. And these intermittent sources of energy, you don't know exactly what they're going to do at what time, and so you have to plan for the worst. And the same way, we overbuild our system here in Georgia because we're planning for the worst. When we have a polar vortex, people want to be warm, and they're going to turn their heat pumps up, and it's going to impact the grid, and we've got to be prepared for that. Well, let me ask you, John, about batteries. We've talked about extending the life of solar through batteries. You've got batteries on your home in Smyrna. How do batteries in Atlanta? How does batteries actually work with a solar system?
So, I was very grateful to get the first Tesla Powerwalls in Georgia. Something for a geek like myself to just nerd out on. And what it allows me to do is a 10 kW solar system that I have now. Heretofore, I was only using some of it during a sunny day. I wasn't even in the house. I was in my office. And so what we were able to do is take all that excess power, stick it in a battery, and then in the evening time you come in and the oven turns on to cook and all these other apparatuses kick on, your electricity usage goes up, you're burning battery and you're not burning sun because ain't no sun.
Well, words matter, and we're unpacking what all these energy words mean because we've got a linguist in the house. We're going to continue this discussion with Dr. Tidwell, Andrew Saunders, and John Noel. I'm Tim Eccles, and energy does matter. Stay tuned.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854, Rowe Insulating Company. Welcome back to Energy Matters. I'm your host, Tim Eccles. In the studio with me, as always, John Noel, former state representative and energy expert. John, how's it going?
Good morning.
And Andrew Saunders, sustainability director for Athens Clark County.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Jackie Tidwell, a linguist and a professor at the University of Georgia. Go Dogs.
Yes, sir. It's nice to be here.
John, you're outnumbered. We've got three dogs against Chicago College.
We were the Foresters.
The Foresters?
Well, those are my people.
We were the Foresters. Hey, we had a big axe. That's all I could say.
Yeah. What was your... What did y'all carry around an axe?
We actually had a Forester with an axe, and then, you know, as political correctness just took over... I don't know. Maybe we're a beaver now. It's hard to know really what's going on with these colleges nowadays.
Well, we hope that you are on Twitter and that you follow us. The show is at Matters Radio. I'm at Tim Eccles. I'm a public service commissioner here in the state of Georgia. Andrew's at ACC Green, stands for Athens Clark County, ACC Green. The smallest county in Georgia, isn't it?
That's correct.
Geographically.
Yes.
But with brain power, the largest.
Debatable.
Yeah.
Don't give the bumblebees credit.
Yeah, I don't want to give the bumblebees any credit. You're at The Why Supply.
Yes, sir.
Why did y'all call that The Why Supply?
Because we're out there trying to find out why people choose to adopt the things they choose to adopt around energy, and the supply that is data to all of these wonderful people like you guys.
That's right.
And we are sponsored this half hour by Arnold Golden and Gregory. John, tell us about them.
So Arnold Golden and Gregory has a fabulous law firm in Atlanta.
Atlantic Station.
Atlantic Station, in fact. And they have a lot of knowledge in the business space. They have their attention to detail and transparency. They help businesses, individuals. They take all kinds of clients. But their real focus is the business side of things. They have this great expression, and I kind of like, you hear it in a lot of other areas in Atlanta. It's called, not if, but how. AGG, we appreciate their support.
John Gornall, and I don't know if he wants me telling anybody this, but during my campaign, he called me and said, Tim, I want to help you. And he took about four young people in his vehicle and went out and knocked doors for me during that campaign.
Wow.
I tell you, that is way above the call of duty.
I'll say.
And I really, really appreciate
Not
it.
Not every day a lawyer gets out from behind his desk. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
John doing that. And they work a lot with the Georgia Solar Energy Association. You know, they host the speaker's dinner every year, and they're very involved with renewable energy. I mean, John, as they're doing big projects around our state, lawyers are just inevitably a part of those projects, aren't they?
That's true. I mean, and you know, I make crack comments, but I mean, they are an integral part of our society and our business. I'm a 20-year business owner. I've essentially become my own lawyer, it feels like, because there's just so much legal stuff that goes on.
Hey, we want to do some more Q&A, and we've got the linguist in the house, and Dr. Tidwell, unpacking things for folks is important, I guess, to helping them, one, be able to communicate with us and help them go maybe further when they're interested in something. In the last segment, we talked about tidal and wave energy. We talked a little bit about time of use rates and what that means. We talked about solar thermal versus solar PV. Andrew, let me turn to biomass, which is really an energy source that doesn't get a lot of attention in Georgia, but we have all of these trees. You were a forestry, you've got a forestry graduate degree. What is biomass exactly?
So biomass is basically any organic thing you can burn to create energy, to make steam. And so traditionally it's going to be wood chips. When we're shipping it overseas, it comes in the form of wood pellets, but it could also be switchgrass, urban wood waste, and in its uglier side, it can be municipal garbage.
You can actually burn garbage. What about like the tire shreds that Cox Enterprises, through their Cox Conserves program, they're using that pyrolysis process, which is cleaner than just burning them because it's an oxygen-free environment. Do you see state-of-the-art things like that with biomass? And would you consider tires to be biomass?
I actually don't know that I consider tires to be biomass because you have to break them down into their original compounds to extract out the energy and resources. I'm sure there's people smarter that could debate that with
probably
me.
Probably a close cousin.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Technically you could say pallets are biomass, and like I say, some places burn trash, and you could say that that's biomass as well. But we are seeing new technologies, and you know, another one that we see a lot of, picked up over the last decade, was looking at making transportation fuels out of these organic products. So biodiesel.
Like out of chicken grease or French fry oil, things like that?
That's right.
Yeah.
Algae.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a huge lab out in Arizona State, out west, where they have entire algae beds that are producing different forms of diesel.
That's exactly right. I was in Israel years ago, and they there was a new startup that was producing diesel fuel from algae.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
That's incredible. Yeah. I know UGA has a little algae lab over there. I think it's off River Road where they're experimenting with that. Let me ask you, Dr. Tidwell, about nuclear terminology. I can't even say the word properly, but nuclear power plants.
Nuclear.
And we call that actually nuclear transference. Nuclear.
Yeah. So, you know, President Bush, they always made fun of him for how he said it. I'm sure people make fun of me for how I say it. But you grew up with a dad working at one of these plants.
True.
You've been to these plants. You're not afraid of these plants. And you've, I think you know the value that they have. But you told me that they speak a language, and it's not necessarily the same language.
Well, they do. And so what a lot of folks don't know is that the nuclear industry is governed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They've divided the country into four different regions. So you can actually think of the nuclear industry, even the way they talk about technical things, like, for example, tech specs or how they operate the plant. the way that they talk about something as basic as the public or safety is different in each region of the country or even in each fleet, so each utility. So it's really kind of fascinating. They all have different dialects.
Fleet. And so in the case of Georgia Power, that would be our two nuclear plants that we currently have?
That would be the Southern Power.
Yeah, so Plant Hatch and Plant Vogtle, which are both, by the way, in the same congressional district. They are both in the 12th district with Rick Allen. Prior to that, John Barrow. And John Barrow, many folks in and around Athens will remember him as a county commissioner. He was very pro-nuclear energy. In fact, John, there are a lot of Democrats out there that are pro-nuclear energy, I think, because they link these together with solar and wind and see a cleaner future without fossil fuels.
Mm. They're also hypothesizing about carbon capture along with it in some places.
Yeah. Can you explain what carbon capture is?
So carbon capture is a pretty new technology where the notion is that they're literally scrubbing the air, trying to capture CO2 and then store it. So think about basically having a big filter in the air that is grabbing those awful carbon dioxide compounds and then finding ways to transfer it and then use it in other situations. I mean, it's not as clean as the stuff that, you know, they've make your Coca-Cola fuzzy with, but
down in Mobile, the Southern Company has a little research unit down there where it's a small boiler where they are using coal and they are capturing the CO2 and they're sending it down, I believe, an 11-mile pipe and then putting it down into a saline aquifer. And they've tested this technology, and one of the questions I had for them, well, how much energy did you use to actually send it down the pipeline to keep that compressor going? And they said it took about 22% of the energy of the plant just to run the sequestration piping operation. So I just don't know if that's I don't know if that's scalable. I'm not sure if I want to use that much energy locally, you know, at the plant to be able to run things. Yeah. Well, John, let me ask you a question because insulate, we're one of our sponsors, Rowe Insulating Company, and they put insulation in my house, and that was one of the first things that Jackson EMC said to me on my energy audit is you don't have enough insulation. Before you put solar panels on this, before you do anything else, you get that insulation in there to make this house tighter. So what is insulation and why does it matter so much?
We talk about energy production a lot, solar, nuclear. All these other things, and what we forget about is the efficiency piece, making our homes, our businesses, as Andrew does, government buildings, much more efficient. Insulation is a primary way to do that, and we all think of Pink Panther, these bats, these fiberglass bats that go in the wall or go under the floor or in our attic, and they go in between the joists and things like this. That is the basic, and I would argue the worst, insulation. Then there's much better insulation in the attics, which are this is a blown in fiberglass. Rowe Insulation can talk about all this stuff, and this is what they do and do well. They blow in a fiberglass, a fluffy, you know, loose fill. And then there's another version that's not fiberglass oriented that is also a fluffy and sort of white in composition, white and gray in composition, and that's a cellulose or cellulosic, if you want to sex it up a little bit. Form of insulation, and then the last one, and the Cadillac, if you might say, and in my opinion, the best bar none, sound, all kinds of other benefits that you get from it, is spray foam or spray in insulation, and that literally adheres to the walls, to the under portions of your home, to your attic, and that seals your home, depending on the type, open or closed cell. And several inches of this sort of foam, and it I don't know what you might call it, encapsulates your house in a way that all these others allow air and things to get through. This really tightens and seals your home and is the best form of insulation. It's also the most expensive, but it's a first-class way to insulate your house.
Yeah, my insulation was about $2,400 on the job, and that included putting a special tent on the attic door because I didn't realize I was losing an R factor of about 7 out of that attic door.
That's another piece, yeah.
Well, let's keep this conversation going. After the break, I want to give the audience my 12 for 12 challenge.
Whoa.
I have a special challenge that's going to save you $12 per week on your energy bill.
I'm all ears.
And while you're at it, look at us on Twitter. It Matters Radio for the show. John's at New Energy Guy. Andrew's at ACC Green. And Dr. Tidwell is at The Y Supply. So stick around. We'll be back to talk about how to save you energy, to use technology, and to help you live a more sustainable life.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit. And the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by BMVW Auto Sales.
Support for Energy Matters this half hour comes from BMVW Auto Sales, the only place to get your used electric car in Metro Atlanta. Unbelievable, but true. Mohsen and his staff will loan you an EV for 3 days to try out. You won't be disappointed with the deal you get there. I've seen them. It's amazing. See more at ev-hybrid.com.
And John, you have had EVs. I've had EVs. And EVs aren't necessarily for everyone, right? So you need
That's true.
Yeah, you need to take a look at it and make sure this works. I mean, if you're a single college student graduating and you have relatives in another state, well, maybe it's not the best car for you to have.
But That's exactly right.
If you are married and y'all have two cars, I don't really see why anyone that lives in a metro area with both spouses working in the metro area, why they couldn't
have at least one electric
car.
That's right. That's been my thought, too.
And these Nissan Leafs, you can buy a 2015 Nissan Leaf for under $10,000, a used one. And so who cares if you get the tax credit or not?
And you don't have to do oil changes. I mean, you just get into all this stuff. It's like, it kind of blows your mind. You know, wait a minute. There's no engine in this thing anymore.
Yeah.
There's no parts to break down like
that. In the studio, you're hearing his voice, John Noel, former state representative, energy expert, and Andrew Saunders, the sustainability director for Athens Clark County. Andrew, what's your thought on electric cars? I mean, you've been around them.
So I love them. I owned two over a period of 3 years, and what we found in our family is we always had a gas engine cousin, but we were always taking the electric as much as we could. I'm really excited to see that market mature. I think the early Leafs and Bolts and things of that nature were great for early adopters, great for Atlanta and urban environments, but seeing range tick up while price comes down is going to be that magic factor that makes it available to more people.
Dr. Tidwell, there's even, you're a linguist, you work at UGA. There's even language around electric cars.
There certainly are. There's also language around not only the cars themselves, but as we have discussed at times with some colleagues of mine, there's language about the folks who use them. So
yeah. So what do you see as the difference between a Leaf driver and, say, a Tesla driver?
Oh, I don't want to answer that on the air. But nonetheless, I think it does lead to the whole notion of the early adopter and, frankly, that identity that tends to get communicated down from the folks who run those companies. So,
you know, Casey Boyce, one of our frequent guests, has done studies in this area. Would it surprise you that most EV drivers are male?
Nope.
Yeah. John, you have a Tesla. Mm. What do you think is the difference between a Tesla a driver and a Leaf driver? You've actually had both.
I've had both. I smuggled in my Leaf. They didn't even sell them in Georgia, so I think I had the third Leaf in Georgia. I am an early adopter, so I think people that drive, whether it's Leafs or Teslas, want to be early adopters. And in the case of a Tesla, I think it has to do more about technology. I really believe. A friend of mine is a tech entrepreneur guy in Atlanta, and he told me he had bought a Tesla. He just told me yesterday he feels like it is on the cutting edge of innovation, and he's a cutting edge guy. He's a cutting edge company, and he wants to drive a cutting edge car. I feel the same way.
And you know, the conspicuous consumption element is another interesting aspect.
What do you mean by that?
When the hybrids came out, you know, the Prius became the big dog on the block, but there were other hybrids available. And what some of the sociologists tell us is people bought Priuses because they were then recognized as being different. They set themselves apart, whereas the hybrid driver for a Honda or some other vehicle, it wasn't so visible.
You know, Allie Kelly mentioned to us, she's the executive director for the Racy Anderson Foundation project down the Ray Highway. She said that Racy Anderson, who has passed away, that when he had his conversion to be a green industrialist, that he traded in his Bentley for a Prius for exactly that reason.
I said at the time, I said to Allie, I remembered seeing him at a South Face Energy dinner. We were at the valet line in Atlanta, at Marriott maybe. He is up his car poles, and it's a Prius. And I went, this guy is walking the talk.
Yeah, let's talk about some EV technology language for just a second. So, John, you hear about level one charging.
Yeah.
Level two charging,
yep.
And some people say level three, but it's really called DC fast charging. Unpack that for us. What do those three levels mean?
So level one is plugging into the wall. Spin around in your house, and there's a wall plug.
Any
outside
plug in,
garage.
Anywhere.
Any plug, outside, anything. And so when I had my Leaf, I would just plug into the wall and charge for a while. Then I got... there was a DOE grant, and I got a level two charger. And a level two charger, they have to put that in. The electricians come and put that in. It's a box on the wall, has a larger plug, and it goes into the electrical panel. And in my case, it was 24 amps, which is sort of a larger circuit in your house, and that charges your car faster. So a level one would charge your car at approximately 4 miles of range per hour. A level two, at least in the case of my rather moderate level two, charges at about 18 miles per hour. And there's some higher amperage level twos at 32 amps of juice. That's how much it's drawing, that charge at about 22 miles per hour. So that's in the low range of charging. And then you move to the, what's that?
You just kind of went really super dorky on us.
Can we just simplify it and say
a level two is basically like you're plugging into your dryer outlet and it's a lot quicker.
When you look in that fuse box and, you know, like the dryer and the AC, they take two circuits, right?
Yeah, so the weird looking plug.
The charger does the same.
That's
the
right.
Level two.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I put my level two into my garage, the fuse box was in the garage. An electrician came out, $200.
Yeah.
He put in what was called a junction box.
Yep.
And then wired in the pigtail, so to speak, of the charger into that. The charger was $499.
Yep.
So for about $700, you can get a charger in your garage that will charge your Nissan Leaf in about 4 or 5 hours.
That's true. And in fact, with both the Tesla and I believe the Leaf, they have converter plugs on them. So if you wanted to go El Cheapo, you could bypass the $500 box and just get a plug, or use the dryer plug or whatever, if your dryer happens to be in your garage or near there. Plug into that and plug directly off of that electricity, because all you're looking for is the electricity. You're not looking for the boxes and everything else, and that's what you're going for. Then you move to that level three, or DC fast charger, as it's sometimes called, and that is just, in the case of the Tesla, it is a special network that's built out that throws in about, so we were talking about 24 amps or 32 amps, now that thing is throwing about 400 amps. It'll ramp down to about 300 or 200 at various times of the charge, but you see this massive influx, and no other cars have that. So it gives you the very fastest charge in the world today. But a typical DC fast charge level three would be 150 amps, and it's a big old plug.
And you, when you travel, you stop at these Tesla
supercharger
locations. And what do you do while your car sitting
Eat
there
lunch.
Being charged?
You go to the bathroom, you stretch, you let the dog out to pee, those sort of things.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, if you can orchestrate your drive, Macon, Savannah's a great example. Did a lot of business in Savannah. Macon had a supercharger. Cruised into the Macon supercharger, let the dog out, wandered around a little bit, visited friends, had lunch downtown. I can walk around. And then go back to supercharger 45 minutes later, bam, I'm out of there.
And you can get all the way from Macon to Savannah.
Absolutely.
On the charge. And then what would you do in Savannah?
It had taken me a week in my Leaf. I mean, and actually, we installed the first level 2 charger at that courthouse when I had my Nissan Leaf, and I was the first person to plug in at that thing. And it took me half a day to get down there, and it took me nearly half a day to get back in that Nissan Leaf.
Yeah, and so you got to Savannah, and they have more chargers there.
Yes, they do. Yeah, so in Savannah, they've built out a network of level 2 chargers in the garages, and you just plug in, then you stay in the hotels nearby, and you're in business.
Electric cars are coming. UBS says they're going to be disruptive in 2031.
Tesla's bringing the Model 3, the $35,000 Model 3.
You know, Dr. Tidwell, as you think about low-income people in our state, And electric cars and solar technology, and I know you haven't necessarily done research on electric cars, but what do you see as the obstacles to ownership or participation, you know, for folks that, you know, that aren't wealthy, that don't have college degrees, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, beyond the money aspect, the biggest obstacle is them understanding, and frankly, that range issue that got brought up earlier being addressed, just because you just mentioned that it would have taken you a week to get down to Macon or Savannah. That's not possible or actually even healthy for folks that are working to just make ends meet. And so that adaptability and schedule is not a luxury that they have.
Mm. You know, Dr. Tidwell, you talk about perception, and I would wonder if those perceptions had played into policy in Georgia. The average EV driver is actually paying about 4 times in transportation tax what they would pay if they drove a gas engine vehicle.
$200.
And in my opinion, I think that was perceived as the Atlanta tax. We're going to get those rich people in Atlanta, the early adopters. But I think the unintended consequence is now anybody who is low income could actually save money by being in one of these vehicles is hit with that punitive tax.
And I think you're exactly right.
One of the unintended consequences of what the legislators did there in 2015 is that low-speed electric vehicles, you see these around on the UGA campus at Georgia Tech, they have a tag, they have a seatbelt, they don't have any doors, they're the Gym Cars. And in fact, Gym Cars, Gym Car Service is one of our new sponsors. And I was recently sent a copy of a tag receipt where a Gym Car was charged more than the man's Silverado. Well, stick around after the break. I promise I'm going to tell you about my 12 for 12 challenge to help you be able to save $12 per week if you will just modify your behavior ever so slightly. And John, that's $624 a year.
Approximately.
Yeah, to do something very, very simple. But you're going to have to think about it.
Ooh,
you're going to have to do something every day to do this, but it's going to be worth it. So stick around for our final segment. I'm Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters. And you can follow us on Twitter at Matters Radio. We'll be back.
You've heard about Gym Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gym Cars and trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gyms have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GemCarService.com.
Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable.
Hey, we're back with Energy Matters, and it's actually a sad segment for us because we are saying goodbye today to our most proficient producer, Amber Henderson, as she heads to California works in California. Amber, you're leaving us.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and where are you going to be in California? What are you going to be doing out there?
I'll be in Santa Rosa, California, and I'll be a morning show co-host for a radio station called Froggy 92.9.
Froggy, that is
Froggy. Yeah, isn't that cute?
And will y'all play music, or will it be talk radio?
It's country music.
Country music.
Man. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that funny?
So the Californians, Californians often mock Southerners, and most country music, I think people think, originate from Nashville or the South. Do Californians like country music?
Absolutely. Country music is actually the biggest of all radio. It's the country music listeners, they range all over the United States, and it's actually really big in Northern California. And the listeners for country music look just like the listeners in Georgia. It's pretty interesting to see, because you see California as more of like an eclectic type of
area.
But actually the country music listeners are about the same.
Well, we wanted to just tell you that you're in for some shocks, especially around energy policy, other things like that. So I'm going to have my team of experts kind of try to prep you for this in this episode. So I guess first I want to say that you're in for a shock with traffic in California and tolls. I was recently out there for a football game back during the season, and we wound up getting in the toll lane, which I thought the pass covered it on the rental car, but no, that was only in a certain part of California, and I started getting these bills for the tolls and the fines, and it was awful. So are you prepared for the traffic?
The traffic in Santa Rosa isn't as bad. We're an hour outside of San Francisco, so I'm not prepared. No, I'm not ready. Yeah. And I'm perpetually a late person anyway. So
they listen to country music in San Francisco?
They do.
Unbelievable. This might blow your mind, Tim.
And they listen in LA.
Andrew, are you ready?
Andrew, what do you think she needs to be ready for in terms of energy out there?
Well, you're going to use less of it, but it's going to be more expensive.
Like how much more?
What,
like
25% to 30%?
Yeah. I think it's going to be at least 25% or 30%, if not double, because you're probably paying about 12 cents plus junk fees on your bill now. And I would suggest you make sure that you call your utility and ask them about their time of use rate, because from 2 to 7, you may be at work, and that house may be empty, and you may be able to save some money there. Yeah, so that's something to think about. John, what do you think she needs to consider energy sustainability when she's in California?
You need to get LED light bulbs.
Okay.
That is like a no-brainer. They're cheap at Home Depot. Just load up on the appartamento with that. And then I like the idea of that variable rate, but you also might look at getting an electric car, because they subsidize very heavily. They have, unlike Georgia, they actually have a state incentive when you buy electric cars there. There's a state incentive. They have preference in lanes. There's many more charging stations. It's far more advanced in adopting electric cars there than it is here.
Okay.
And, that Tesla factory is up there.
Fremont.
In Fremont. And it used to be, actually, I think, the El Camino factory.
Is that right?
They used to make El Caminos.
So get a tour of that. The first thing you do, get there, get a tour of that factory, because it is like something out of space age. It's amazing. It's the most advanced factory in the world.
So we've got a linguist here. And certainly there's a lot of difference in the way Californians talk. I mean, is she going to have like some kind of...
Oh, my God.
Is she going to have some kind of Southern accent withdrawal as she gets out there and talks to all the
Valley girls?
No,
because they have their own wonderful, beautiful accent out there. But what I will say, though, is actually their perceptions of energy you are going to get to benefit from. So, excuse me. First of all, there is because of the climate and microclimates out there. I actually lived in the Bay Area for over a year and a half and didn't have air conditioning. So my electric bill actually wasn't too terribly bad. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the case. But then there's also something called the Bay Area Shares Program, where you can register to get discounts on zero emission vehicles. So
boom.
There's a lot of influx of good perceptions and thus resources.
Okay.
John, Cox Enterprises, the parent of this station, for their employees in California, they actually finance solar panels for their employees for a time. So there are a lot more homes or apartments that will actually have solar already on it.
And there's about to be a lot more because they just passed a bill saying if you build new construction, you have to have solar
in California.
Not solar ready. You got to have it on it. That's pretty big news. And the state as a whole is going by, and I'll make the number up. Somebody can double check it. But 2040 or something, I mean, the state is going to be 100% renewable energy portfolio for all the state energy consumption, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah, and of course, you're going to enjoy, you know, the beaches and all the great things that you see out in California. I can only go out there for a little while, and I start going crazy with the way they think about Republicans, because I'm a Republican, and kind of their energy philosophy. I differ a lot from those guys, though I'm friends with some of their commissioners, but I don't think I could live out there, John.
Well, so I went for the Rose Bowl, and nobody made fun of my accent, and
no.
Things didn't get too dicey, but if they do, just take what we do in Europe when we're traveling and tell them you're Canadian.
Oh.
The Andrew Saunders doctrine.
They told me
tell
my accent was charming. They said there was a few words that they found charming.
They like it.
Okay, thank you.
They ate it up.
Well, we're going to really miss you.
I'll miss you guys too.
On our show, and you've really just made it top drawer and better than I ever thought it could be. And so
well, thank you, Tim.
Best of luck as you head to California, and we hope to see you again.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that.
Well, that's our producer, Amber Henderson, is heading to California, and we're going to miss her. We want to continue with our expert panel, John Noel, former state representative, my co-host.
Yes, sir.
Andrew Saunders, the sustainability director for Athens-Clarke County, and Dr. Tidwell, a linguist and professor at the University of Georgia. We've been unpacking in this episode words because we've got a linguist in here, and we want to make sure that you understand.
And we have the best words.
And we do have some phenomenal words. Have you ever heard of NIMBY? NIMBY, you've heard of that, Dr. Tidwell?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
NIMBY, or not in my backyard syndrome. It first really emerged in conversations in the 80s, but it's become a really big issue for those of us who do energy work because it's this notion of, yeah, your renewable energy, like your solar array, is fine, just not next door to my really pretty house.
Yeah, that's right. And this was an example. This happened in Nashville. Everybody loves to hate Al Gore. Bought in a high-rent district, Bellmead in Nashville, and he wanted to put solar panels on his house. And he was the first person in this affluent area of Nashville to put solar panels on their house, and everybody had a fit. They're like, oh my gosh, it's going to be incredibly ugly, blah, 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 and you have to get a special permit, blah, 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 blah. And next thing you know, I mean, he finally got it, but it took a huge deal to get solar panels on a house in Nashville, you know, 5-10 years ago.
You know, I hear that time and again about the visual appeal of solar panels, and I just keep thinking to myself, I don't think roofs are that particularly attractive.
No, and I think it was even on the backside of that. I don't think anybody could even see it.
Ugly doors, my thing.
Okay. Yeah. John, you and I were talking about composting and biomass, and I had purchased a biogas unit from Israel, the first in Georgia, and my neighborhood association would not allow me to put it in my backyard, and you wound up buying the unit.
Yep, I did, and now it's in my backyard.
Yeah. So, but you've got a different backyard. You've got a garden. You've
That's
got
right.
a pool. You've got all kind of stuff out there because you have more acreage.
That's
than,
right.
Than
just
I
more
did.
Land. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, in Germany, when I was over there, and they were building their offshore wind turbines. These are really big, 110-meter wind turbines out in the North Sea. They were having trouble running the big 500 kV. These are the giant lines with the big steel towers that you see. They were having trouble getting the energy from the northern part of Germany to Bavaria, where the manufacturing
industrial.
Is. You think about Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, all those guys down in Bavaria. And the folks did not want those big towers in their backyard. And that the NIMBY issue certainly presents challenges.
Yep. And this is I've talked about the need that I think we have for offshore wind. I think we ought to be looking offshore wind, but it can be over the horizon. There's technologies now that allow it to be over the horizon.
Well, I've got to give some linguistic explanation to my 12 for 12 challenge. I've been hyping this, and here's the 12 for 12 challenge. And I really thought of this challenge As I leave my house, I go around and I click off lights. I have the compact fluorescents and I have LEDs, and I replace those compact fluorescents with LEDs as soon as they burn out. But I notice that normally after my family's gone and I'm the last one to leave, that I'm clicking about 12 lights off. About 12 lights off. So I asked Georgia Power to compute what 12 60-watt incandescent lights that are left on all the time, what those cost. And they said it's about $12 a week. So here's my 12 for 12 challenge. You walk out of your house, you click off lights, you do it 12 times. You're going to save $12 per week. And we had our linguists do the math. It was $624 per year just from playing the 12 for 12 game. I mean,
that's amazing.
John, how hard is it to start a habit like this?
That's not hard at all. And my lady friend and partner doesn't seem to figure that out. There's all kinds of lights on at the house. It drives me insane.
It's not just a gender thing. It's my husband, too.
It actually is a gender thing.
No, it's
I know this is going to be unpopular.
I'm the only female on the mic. Yeah. I'm telling you.
There's
my husband
research
does it too.
From Auburn. Yeah.
You've got a PhD. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye to all of our panelists, and we've had them on this full hour. I want to thank Dr. Tidwell for all her work at UGA and for being on our show today. Keep up the great work. Andrew Saunders, you're awesome, and thanks for what you're doing for Athens-Clarke County. I'm Tim Eccles, and my host, John Noel, wishing you a great weekend and reminding you that energy does matter.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit. And the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.